Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast this week. The team is back together. Sarah Elgin's here and Steve Cording are both here in the studio with me. Steve, Sarah, how are you?
Good, thanks, Mark.
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. It's been quite the week, if I'm honest with you.
You've had a busier week with your various get-togethers celebrating the 20th anniversary of the World Cup win. What's it been like seeing the lads again?
Sorry, just say that again. What was it? Well, it was great fun. Thank you very much. I never thought I'd say this, but we played the Apollo, the iconic music venue in Hammersmith. And there was, well, they were obviously real rugby fans, like super fans, because you could have walked out on stage and said anything and they would have clapped, to be honest with you. But no, it was...
Did they laugh at all your jokes?
It was great to see everyone. And yeah, it has been 20 years. But it feels like it was yesterday, really. When you get together with a group of people that you've had that kind of experience with, because we didn't just go to Australia and win in a week. We spent about 6 or 7 years together. So a 20-year break was probably enough time just to reflect.
Because that was going to be my next question. Because obviously within a team, you get on really well with some players and maybe not so much with others because of club rivalries or positions or whatever it may be. 20 years on, do you see people in a different way, in a different light?
Oh, I think you have an enormous respect for them from a rugby perspective, but I think you have an even greater respect for them in terms of, because you see them grow up, you've seen different sides to them all, really. So yeah, it was amazing, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how many of us would have reconnected had we not won.
That's
the question we'll leave, really.
Take it the Australians weren't getting back together 20 years later.
No. But do you know what? People ask me, what was your favourite moment in the Rugby World Cup, 20 years ago? And it was really in that changing room for that 2 hours that we had together after the final whistle, because you knew that the minute you walked out that door, that team and your life and their lives would never be the same again.
That video that was pretty special. Right?
And so to get everyone back in a room without the public, without people jumping all over you, it was just the coaches, the players, your wives, partners. It was very special, actually, and it was very enjoyable. And
we were back at
Penny Hill Park. So,
How was that? Yeah, was that Sunday night?
Saturday night. So, yeah, they closed the bar early, which was very unusual. I said, you never used to do this when we were playing. I said, look, just imagine we've won again, okay? Because that's what we used to do. We used to walk in the bar and say, right, champagne.
How many of those wives were the original wives?
Oh.
There's a question.
That's a terrible thing to ask, Steve. Stick to rugby questions.
I mean, I did have to have a quick look at the names just to make sure
Lawrence.
I didn't do anything wrong.
Don't humour him.
No, I won't.
Have you had a good week, Steve?
Yeah, not bad, actually. I managed to sneak into the long room at Lord's for an MCC dinner on Thursday night, which was very, very nice, very special. Never been in there before.
Was it a long dinner?
It was a very long dinner. Yes, yeah, very enjoyable, though. Did get looked after. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get the dress code quite right. It did say jacket and tie, and I went with my jeans on. There was a few frowns at the door.
Of course it was. It's not media. It's not a media meeting.
But I managed to get in. So, yeah, good night.
Good. I'm glad. Okay, so, well, a bit later, we'll be joined by the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Perwell, as we look ahead to the weekend's Premiership action. But first, let's introduce this week's guest. He's the owner of one of London's most acclaimed restaurants with 2 Michelin stars to his name. He's also published numerous cookbooks and is a familiar face across our TV screens, having been judged and host of programmes such as MasterChef, The Professionals and Five Star Kitchen. It's Michel Roux Jr. Hi, Michel. How are you?
I'm really good, actually. A little bit croaky, I must admit, but that's my grandson.
You don't sound croaky. You sound perfect.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
How old is your grandson?
He's 4. 4 and very snotty. He comes back from the from the nursery with lots of bugs, but we still love him.
I'm sure you do. Some people might be a bit confused that we've invited you onto the podcast, actually, because it's not so Lawrence can get some tips for his culinary skills. It's actually because you're a massive rugby fan.
Yeah, I love my rugby and been a Quins fan for, well, ever since I can remember. I used to go very, very regularly and then for some reason, rugby changed. It was no longer at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. It became Friday evening, Saturday lunchtime, Saturday evening. It was all over the place. So, yeah, go a little less frequently. My next game down at the Stoop is the game against Toulouse, which should be a cracker. Okay. I mean, all the internationals should be back and it should be a really good game now.
Michelle, did you play rugby at school as well?
Yeah, I played for my school. That's Emmanuel School in Battersea, and I was on the wing or 15.
Actual on the wing.
Yeah. Exactly. I was away from I was a long way away from the big lads like you.
Well, quite
right. You don't want to be with them.
You're smart, which is probably why you managed to run so many marathons.
And I read that you're an honorary member at Harlequins. Yeah. What privilege do you get, or privileges do you get as a member?
I don't know who bestowed that upon me, but it is there, isn't it? I don't know, really. I mean, I pay for my tickets like everybody else.
He's got 2 stars, which is more than Harlequins has got.
That's true.
Lawrence, you're spiky today.
He is, isn't he? I don't really dislike them anymore.
Dislike them anymore.
Gosh. Absolutely.
So those are your club loyalties. When it comes to internationals, obviously you were born in England, but obviously of French heritage. When it comes to Le Crunch, which team do you support?
I mean, I can't deny I've got French blood running through my veins, and it really does give me a huge buzz when I see France playing so well like they have been over the last few seasons. But I still have a huge passion for the English team as well, and I want both teams to excel and do well. And it really annoys me when England don't do well. I mean, it really annoys me.
Yeah, it doesn't annoy the rest of all the people that play against them. Everyone seems to really dislike England, but you're absolutely right. It's the French have been playing some magnificent rugby, haven't they? And being a creative man yourself in the kitchen, I mean, they lost that creativity for a few years, didn't they? But they've really got it back. I mean, it was it's superb. Now, listen, Sarah is partial to a few cheesy chips, aren't you?
I do like cheesy chips. I'm so sorry. I do enjoy cheesy chips at a rugby match.
Before you go on air as well.
Well,
when we're on TV, around all the various rugby grounds, we always, I mean, obviously having Italian heritage, I mean, it's quite important that I go and sample some of the,
of course,
the delicacies around the rugby grounds.
What is Italian heritage about hog roasts that you have Exeter?
Well, I mean, there's no Italian food served at Exeter, right, is there, really? Okay. So it hasn't quite stretched that far. I've seen you at games before. I've seen you at Quins. Mm. What would you, I mean, you probably look around the ground and think, I better eat before I get there, actually, if I'm honest with you. I mean, do you enjoy a pie and a pint, or is it more of a glass of red?
I mean, at Stoop, the hospitality is very good.
Is it?
Yeah, it is very good, I must say. And the food, they do well, and the service is good. But I don't go there particularly for the food. And in fact, many years ago, I do remember being almost coerced into advising them and being a consultant. And I said, look, listen, you know, I come here for enjoyment. I don't come here to work.
I'm not cooking your cheesy chips.
No. You ever cook cheesy chips?
Yeah, of course I do. Oh. There's a French equivalent for that.
There we go.
Yeah. It's about the rugby.
Although, I mean, saying that, I mean, there are some great concessions, I mean, at the Stoop, but also in other rugby grounds, where you can get a good hog roast or a sausage sandwich or, you know, you name it. And it'll be good nowadays. And that has come leaps and bounds. I mean, you can go and enjoy a game of rugby, football, go to the races and get decent food.
Okay, here's a question for you. As head chef of La Gavroche, as Lawrence just mentioned, you've had to create all sorts of special dishes. Okay, so if rugby was a meal for you, what would it be? That's a good question, right? That's one of my best, I think.
What would it be for you, Sars?
Okay. Well,
it wouldn't be cheesy chips.
No, it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Well, although saying that, it could be a truffade. Truffade is the equivalent of cheesy chips. It's potatoes that are cooked in duck fat and they're with lardons. And loads and loads of cheese on top. And it comes from the Auvergne region, which is not rugby heartland, but they do play a lot of rugby there. But for me, if I were to choose one dish that kind of epitomises French rugby, it would be the cassoulet toulousain or castelnaudary. And it's slow-cooked beans and with the confit canard on top and the sausages and everything. And it's just slow-cooked and it's full of flavour. And it's what you want to eat on a cold winter's day.
Sounds good to me.
Now, your co-host from MasterChef, the professionals, Greg Wallace, is a regular in the green room. I think he goes to the opening of an eyelid, if I'm honest with you. But he's a massive WASP fan, but he can't go and support WASPs. And I know that you enjoy watching the occasional game together.
Yeah.
I mean, you have been to a few matches with him.
Absolutely.
Presume he's got his eye on the sweet trolley. But he's actually known, fairness to him, he's actually got himself in pretty good shape.
He has.
You must have been having a word with him.
No, he's fit as a fiddle and he's great. He looks after himself.
Do you socialise a lot together?
Not as much as I'd like to, because it's a great night out. It really is. I mean, I took him to Paris to a rugby game once and we had the ball of a time, I tell you, really ball of a time. I got two great tickets and we were sat in the French end, of course, but right next to the big brass band. Nice. And we had the big brass band sat right behind us all through the game. It was brilliant.
Well, I mean, listen, notwithstanding that you're finishing at Le Gavroche and you want to spend time with your family, there is definitely a roadshow around European rugby to be had around. I mean, because some of the venues in Lyon, and you think of some of the places you could go to down to Toulouse. There's an idea there, isn't there?
We might
revisit that.
Yes. And do it around food and wine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And these wonderful characters. That I'd love to do that. I'm in.
That's great. Let's do it.
I'm going to sell that. Leave that to me.
you mentioned Greg doing his exercise there. Obviously, you've run 21 marathons, is that right? Is it an occupational hazard being a chef? Do you have to keep fit? With the food that you're tasting and eating, or
I think nowadays, yes, a lot of chefs are very conscious about their physical health and you know, if you're going to work long hours and you know, you need to be fit. But for me, it wasn't just physical health that drew me into it; it was mental health. I always used to run, even when I was smoking a packet or two of cigarettes a day, and I was drinking too much coffee and probably too much alcohol as well. And burning the candle both ends. But, and I was a really moody so-and-so. And then I gave up smoking when Emily was born, so that's 32 years ago. And slowly but surely, my running became more and more pleasurable. Going down round the block.
You could breathe.
I could breathe. But then within about a month, I suddenly realised that I no longer had these crazy mood swings. My migraines disappeared. I used to suffer from debilitating migraines. Mm. Even my wife said, "God,
you're nicer.
You're nicer.
Go running as long as you like.
Go running, but you come back and you're in a good mood." And I slept properly. I cut back on coffee, alcohol. I could think properly, and problem solving became so much easier. Mm. And I just became a much better person. And then I got the bug and then I became obsessed with running marathons. But it's a good obsession to have, I must say.
It is.
Were you charity driven by it, or did you just do it for your own benefit?
No, charity driven as well, because I used to run for Victor, which is Visually Impaired Children Taking Action, and I still raise funds for them. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, but not just, as I said, for physical health, but especially for mental health. And I'm a huge advocate for that. And you don't have to be obsessive like me and run marathons. Even 20 minutes of physical exercise, get the heart going.
So what was your first marathon you ran, the time, down to your latest one? Because I know Steve's going to ask
you. You're going to have a marathon, Steve.
Not comparing, but I'm just interested because, you know, you've got the right figure for a marathon runner.
Yeah. Well, my first one, I was really set on doing sub 3:30, and I did 3:27. Oh, so I was happy with that. But then I was desperate to break the three. I never quite did it. I got to 3:13. Which was good, and then I hit 50, as in the age 50, it suddenly started to get a bit slower.
And was that there? They weren't all in London. Did you do marathons in other cities
all over the world? Yeah,
wow.
All over the world.
How many Londons have you done? I've done London. Here we go. You wait for it. I've done London 7 times. Not as quick as you, Sal. My first one was 3:35. But the last three I did with my father, who at the age of 70 decided to take up marathon running
after
having
prostate cancer.
That's brilliant.
And then I did three with him, and then he carried on. So he did 10 in a row.
I thought you were going to say beat you.
Well, it felt like that in the end. Yeah,
that's amazing, Steve. You never told me that. That is amazing.
Yeah. So his last marathon was when he was 80. So,
that's brilliant. Yeah. That is great. Because you can run at your own speed. You don't have to.
Exactly.
What happens when you get overtaken by an orange or something, or by someone dressed as a horse or something?
That's slightly
worrying.
Well, one of our former sponsors, their bottle, the London Pride bottle, overtook me a couple of times. Seems actually quite quick, though. So, yeah, it does get a bit demoralising when that happens. Are you still running now?
Not as much. My knees are knackered.
Yeah, same.
But I still keep fit, cycle, and go to the gym a lot. And yeah, it's an important part of my routine. Coming back to the question, I'm 13 London.
13 London marathons. Okay, so rugby, let's get back to rugby then. It's had a lot of ups and downs, shall we say, over the past few years, Michelle, and we still want to see it kind of grow as a sport, right? Mm. And I know that you love other sports. You love rugby league, am I right?
Yeah, I absolutely love
Man
rugby
Man U supporter?
Man United fan, yeah.
What is it, though, about the game of rugby union that you think we should all be celebrating a little bit more at the moment? Because it feels like we need to be.
Yeah, values. Mm-hmm. Respect.
Well, it celebrates difference, doesn't it? I mean, that's the lovely
thing. Yeah, celebrating
isn't it?
Difference.
And it's very inclusive.
Very, definitely.
I mean, you have watched rugby all over the world. The French during the World Cup, I mean, that game in the quarter, well, they played some of the best rugby we've ever seen. It was just a great shame that they couldn't get over the line against South Africa. What would you say, in your opinion, has been the best game of rugby you've watched?
That one's going to come pretty close, I must say.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
the best first half of rugby any of us had ever seen,
that was
really.
Extraordinary stuff. I mean, just throwing the ball around and the confidence that both teams were showing. Because to have a great game of rugby, you've got to have two teams that are playing. You can't just have one team. I thought that was beautiful. It was exceptional rugby.
Now, Le Gavroche has got a special place for me because you actually hosted me in 2010 when I did my final marathon for lunch. I've got the menu there behind you. How's it going to feel when you're closing in January? Lots of mixed emotions, I imagine.
Very mixed emotions. When I announced it to the staff 3 months ago, it was a bit teary, I must say.
Because you just tell us, because you stayed open during the pandemic, didn't you? I mean, you didn't stay open, but you pivoted and you did some incredible work.
Yeah. I mean, we had to close like everybody else. Yeah. And I very dark moments for me. I very nearly stopped there.
Yeah.
I said, enough. What's the point? Why should I carry on? And one day when I came into Gavroche to check the fridges and for insurance purposes, we had to go in and just make sure the place was still all right. I bumped into my kitchen porter, Joao, who's been with us 35 years. So we've grown old together, I mean, basically. And my head chef, Rachel, who's likewise been with me 20 plus years. And I saw them and I thought, no, I can't give up. We've got to get out of this. So we during the pandemic, during lockdown, I did a load of stuff. I mean, I suppose like a lot of businesses, we kind of tried to reinvent ourselves and tried to just keep a little bit of money ticking in, you know, just coming through. And so we did a whole lot of stuff. Opened up an e-shop and sold anything with Le Gavroche or Rouen. We were selling it through like Amazon. My wife and myself, we were just boxing up stuff constantly and sending parcels out and doing a lot of stuff online, cooking lessons and such like. I think we did a few together.
Yeah, we did.
So I mean, you're constantly trying to just keep the business afloat. And then when we did reopen, we had to change the business model. So I closed for lunch and kept dinner open, but extended the hours for dinner. So we turned a corner and so the business is back now to sort of booming. And so I took the decision, the lease is coming to an end next year. So it just feels right. And I'm 63 years old. So I'm thinking, look, hang on a minute. Do I really need to renegotiate a lease and go through all of that? And so I'm taking the decision when I'm at the top of my game, as it were. It's not somebody else taking the decision for me. So I'm in control. Previously, I felt that Le Gavroche was the monster, was in control of my life. Whereas now I've flipped it on its head and I am in control of Le Gavroche. So I'm keeping the name.
That must be quite liberating.
It is very liberating.
And you're going out on a high. I mean, you know, not the pandemic, not, you know, with people walking out the door. It's on your terms. And I think, you know, it's a bit like in sport. You know, you don't get to write your own script, but you've done that beautifully. So
I'm guessing you can't squeeze us in for a table next week. you're fully booked up.
We do have a Christmas do next week.
We do.
We haven't booked anyway yet.
Let me tell you now that there is a fine cellar at Le Gavroche. So we do need to discuss, maybe not on air, but off air, what's happening to the £2.5 million worth of wine that is in the cellar.
Really? £2.5 million?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's
we can help you out with, Michelle. We can help you out with getting rid of some of that if you want us to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Right, as you guys may or may not know, Lawrence here has also dabbled in the world of cookbooks.
We are with his Italian.
Is there anything you haven't done?
Listen, my father was in the food business all his life, and he desperately wanted to do that.
Oh, that's cute.
So there we go. I've shot you down there.
I could not do that with him.
And it's our Italian family recipes. So I have a deep passion for food. I was one of the few people that, you know, that was brought up in England that didn't eat their food in front of the television. It was round the table. If you came round to our house when I was younger, whether you'd eaten or not, you'd have to eat again. Because there'd be two or three things you could not say no to food. And I felt blessed, really, because my education of food was way ahead of itself with all the simple Italian, you know, fresh, seasonal, regional food. It's superb.
Did you try and keep that going with your children?
Of course, 100%. 100%.
He's very good at ordering at restaurants. I'm still laughing. We went out to Dublin and we went to an Italian restaurant. We had this lovely gentleman serving us. And Lawrence started because we thought he was Italian.
Yeah.
And Lawrence started ordering in Italian. And he went, sorry, what?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Lalio.
It was much funnier than I'm saying the story. But anyway,
I was always in charge of food and beverage for the England team, and ordering, because you can't leave those. You can't leave some of those players to order any of the food and the wine, by the way.
Anyway, but the whole point of me mentioning that cookbook was, before we let you go, Michelle, we thought we should have a little head-to-head between you and Lawrence just to test your knowledge on each other's specialist subject. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've got only five quick fire questions for you on rugby, and five which Mr. Delalio will have to answer about food and drink. So as our guest, you can go first. Okay, Michelle, which player has made the most appearances for Harlequins?
Danny Kerr.
Correct. Do you know how many? Ooh. Roughly.
No.
361.
Right. It was in the 300s.
And counting.
Still going. Very strong. What a player, eh?
You keep score, Steve. Okay. Since the championship became known as the Six Nations in 2000, how many times have the French held the title?
Ooh. Gee. Six.
Whoa.
You're smashing this, yes. Yeah, that's six? Correct. Well,
I was thinking five or six.
That's good.
Well done. Très bien.
Merci. Okay.
What are the four colours of the Harlequins rugby shirt? That's pretty easy, isn't it?
It's the quarters, isn't it? brown, green, pink.
You'll get that. Right.
Magenta.
Yeah, magenta.
White.
Blue.
Huh? Oh, blue.
Blue.
Sugar.
We'll give you half a point.
Get half a point for that.
Okay. Who is French rugby's top try scorer of all time?
Philippe Saint-André?
No, it's actually your favourite player, according to Wikipedia.
Blanco?
Blanco, oui.
Is he really?
Sugar Puffs.
How many tries has he scored?
Serge Blanco has scored 38.
God, I used to smoke that a day.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of, in the modern era, that's quite amazing that hasn't been broken.
Well, I'm really surprised about that. I thought it was Philippe Saint-André. Mind you, he scored some cracking tries as well.
Scored some good ones. And your final question. The Stoop is named in memory of a former player who made 182 appearances for the club. Do you know his first name?
That's quite a tough one. That's a good trivia question.
Very good question. Yeah. I didn't know that one.
I should know this.
I know.
No, I can't. No.
It's Adrian.
Adrian.
Yeah, that was a tough one, though. That was a tough one. Right, you started so
Adrian.
Well.
You did.
2.5 to beat, Long.
Okay. Oh, well. I'm not holding out much hope for Lawrence. I'm sure he'll be fine. You met him. Right, okay. Lawrence. Oh, see, this is quite easy. A Magnum holds two standard bottles of champagne. A Gerbon, have I said that right? Holds four. But how many bottles of champagne is a Baltzar?
Baltzar.
Oh, that's quite tough, isn't it? I mean, I've drunk a few of those, so I should know. Baltzar, it's not Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to go 12.
16. I feel like we're educating here, though, as we're going along.
That's a lot of champagne.
That is a lot of champagne.
So I was going to say, Lord, you know all those contacts of Bollinger? Can I have a Baltazar, please?
Christmas party coming up. Yep.
Yeah.
In Italy, the Feast of Seven Fishes is celebrated on which day?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Feast of Seven Fishes.
It's Christmas Eve.
Correct.
Well done.
Okay, one.
Well, you have fish on Christmas Eve. Yeah. So, okay.
There you go. What's the minimum amount of time that Parmesan cheese needs to age?
Oh.
You would know this for sure.
The minimum amount of time.
Minimum, yeah.
Oh, years, obviously. I'd say 3 years.
12 months. Wrong.
Minimum
is it a year?
Autumn King, Figaro, and Saint Valerie are all varieties of which vegetable?
Do you know what? He doesn't even know this, or he's just scratching his head.
I could take an educated guess, but...
Ooh. Quick.
I don't know.
Have carrots. A guess. Carrot, you're right. What a guess. What a guess.
Pulled that out.
It had to be rude. Okay. You get this one, you win.
Oh. Yeah. What is the literal translation of ciabatta?
Ciabatta. Oh, I know this. I should know it.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm gonna start counting down. You've got 10 seconds. This podcast isn't 3 hours old. 10. Eight.
Oh, bread. She better. I don't know. Do you know what? I don't know. What is it?
It's slipper.
Slipper. Ciabatta.
Slipper.
So close. But Michelle, I guess you have won by the skin of your teeth.
By half a point.
By magenta.
Drop
by
goal
blue.
In the last minute.
You'll be glad there's four colours on the Harlequin shirt. Half a point.
Oh gosh, that
was good. It was good. Thank you.
He's actually fuming now that he's lost as well.
No, just that, you know, when I got hit with a ciabatta quite a lot when I was younger. So, so I should have known that, shouldn't I? I think my dad must have upgraded pretty quickly. All right. Michelle, it's been an absolute delight to have you on the podcast. We look forward to seeing you both at Harlequins and at international rugby matches around the world. I shall work on that European food journey. All the very best with Le Gavroche. It's the end of an era. It's without doubt one of the most iconic restaurants in the world. And if you need any help with the cellar, then we'll be along next week. If you've got any wine left after Christmas. But listen, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Right then, let's have a look ahead to this weekend's rugby round 8 of the Premiership and the final one before the European Champions Cup kicks in for the next couple of weekends. And joining us to add his views is the Evening Standard rugby correspondent, Nick Prowell. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you guys? Everyone well?
Yeah, really good. We're all good, aren't we? Just to remind you, last weekend saw wins for Northampton, Sale, Leicester, Saracens and Exeter, the first on the road for the Chiefs in 13 months. This weekend, Harlequins welcome Sale to the Stoop. There are two West Country derbies with Bristol and Gloucester going head-to-head and Bath hosting Exeter at the Rec. Saris will face off against Northampton Saints. And last but not least, Newcastle will be paying a visit to Welford Road to take on Leicester Tigers. So some pretty tasty matchups there. Not least with those West Country derbies. Lawrence, which of these weekend's fixtures stand out for you?
Well, I think looking at the sides that have sort of concertinaed at the top, it's so competitive, it's so tight. I think there's one win separates from being sort of seventh. You can jump up to second. So we are going to see a lot of chopping and changing throughout. I think Harlequins at home, they need to get back to winning ways. They should have won at Saints. Bristol and Gloucester, two sides struggling at the moment. You know, can't win a raffle, can they, really? So I think that one is, for different reasons, is really, really important. And then, you know, Leicester at Welford Road. I think Pollard has sort of carried on his form, hasn't he, from the World Cup. So very exciting games.
Nick, what about you? You'd be looking, focusing, I guess, on the Quins and Saris games, no doubt. Am I right? Do you foresee home wins for both those teams?
Yeah, well, I think Quins, it'll be a second home game in a row where they'll have to go up against a big, nasty pack. And then really it comes down to what they can do against that. Marcus Smith go against George Ford, most likely. So it could be a bit of a repeat situation of the Saracens game. We all know what happened there. They came up short, so they're going to have to step up the level. Obviously, they were pretty close at Northampton. They were, you know, you could say they were unlucky to lose that, but they did concede a lot of points. So they need to get back to winning ways, really. But they know it's going to be a massive challenge for them.
So it's been announced just today that Lewis Ludlam's obviously off to France, another player disappearing. Lawrence, Maro Itoje could well be going the same way as well. Is it a bit worrying, this increase in players going to France?
Yes, it is. And, you know, we're still awaiting the announcement of this professional game agreement, which is supposed to revolutionise the relationship between club and country. Look, it's extraordinary circumstances at the moment. You know, why don't you just sit down and change the law? Change the rules. I mean, it's pretty obvious that there's a lot more money in France. We're not suddenly going to see every single player from England going over to France. The French have got a system in place now where they have to have a certain number of French players in their league. It's not just a question of them operating, you know, where they cherry pick our best players. I think time's up now. We need some serious leadership. You know, if you're Saracens and you can only afford one contract, you give it to Owen Farrell. If you're Mauro Itoje, he's played 8 years of rugby relentlessly. He's been successful in the early part of his career. Why don't the RFU and Saracens sit down and say, look, we want to keep you here. We want to keep you here for another 4 years, but we can't afford it. So we'll pay it. We'll put you out on loan to Japan for a year. We'll get £300,000 or £400,000 back for you. And, you know, come up with some sensible situations, because we want Mauro Itoje in the next World Cup. We want some of these players there, but they can't afford it. But there are ways around it. And if you are Steve Borthwick, you know, and you're Bill Sweeney, you've got to change the law. You've got to change the agreement, because we're losing player after player after player.
What's happening with that agreement, Nick? Is it anywhere near being finalised?
No, and I think it's something that's potentially going to go down to the wire, really, unfortunately. I think it's these sorts of negotiations take a long time. There's a lot of horse trading. There's a lot of lobbying. People obviously want to protect their own interests. There is a better cordiality than there ever has been between all the different parties, and Bill Sweeney deserves credit for that. But the time, Lawrence is right, the time's up, because what's happening is that, quite rightly, clubs here and abroad are already making their moves and sorting their squads out for next season. Once upon a time, we had this idea that clubs would set their squad up in the second half of one season for the next season, but certainly clubs in France, whoever has the money, the clubs will be building their squad for next season 12 months in advance, sometime 18 months in advance, if they can get away with it. So at the moment, obviously, guys like Lewis Ludlam and Carl Sinclair, they're being chased very hard, and the options, and there's money there for them. So yeah, England could lose a nucleus of players. I mean, I think Itoje will stay. I think he will do. But I think what people want answers on is what is exactly will be the composition of these deals. Is it going to be a situation where the RFU gives the clubs a pot of money and the clubs distribute it? Or are the RFU effectively going to be paying half or a percentage of player salaries? And could we see a sort of 3 or 4 tier bracket for different caliber of players? Because that would be fascinating. These are the sorts of things they probably won't want to make public, but at the end of the day, they may very well have to.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no agreement between Toulouse and England, but I can guarantee the easiest conversations that Steve Borthwick has when he wants to talk about a player is when he phones up Toulouse, because every single player is an international. They understand the demands of the game. French rugby is not what it used to be. They actually eat some food that makes you fit for rugby nowadays. It's not quite the opposite way round, you know.
It's not cheesy chips.
So, look, you know, I think it's a very dangerous road they're going down with disagreement, you know, buying players time. The players have the power, you know. It's, you know, I used to walk into the club at WAS and say, look, you know, we as a group of international players, this is what we need to do. We need some time off. You know, the players need to shape the future. It can't just leave it to other people, because it's not working. And I don't understand why every player, it doesn't get a sabbatical. You know, not every player, but players like Mauro Itoje can't continue to play the level of rugby he's playing week in, week out, and not, you know, drop down. So give him a year off after a World Cup, let him go to Japan, play 12 games, earn four times as much money, and then bring him back far more hungry and in far better shape to play international rugby.
Good idea.
Don't mess with Lawrence.
Occasionally I have them, yeah, occasionally.
Okay, well, we'll see how all the games play out this weekend, and then we'll see. I mean, we could keep on talking for ages about that whole situation, couldn't we? Lawrence, where are you going to be this weekend?
I am at Saracens, which is another big game, obviously. They play Northampton, and then I'm going up to Leicester Tigers, who take on Newcastle. So,
okay.
How are you enjoying doing the women's prem?
Good, yeah, it's really good. Yeah. So I'm doing three different leagues this weekend. Yeah. I've got the Gallagher Premiership on Friday, I'll be at Quinn's, and then I'm doing the URC on Saturday, and then, yeah, the PWR on Sunday. No, it's really good. It's brilliant. So we've had some great matches already. I mean, it's only round three next week, but yeah, no, it's all good. Thoroughly enjoying it.
Very, very excited. Right, well, that's all for this week. My thanks to Sarah, to Steve, to Nick, and, of course, our special guest, Michel Roux Jr. I do hope you'll be able to join us again next week, when we'll be back with more rugby chat. And until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.